Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode number 24 of Pepperdine People. I'm Regan Schaefer, and I'm joined today by Marshall Howard. We are pleased to have Marshall Howard with us. He is author of Let's Have Lunch Together and known as the guru of relationship-based fundraising. And we're especially honored that he is here, part of our nonprofit leadership speaker series at Pepperdine. He's been a wonderful friend to Pepperdine, and we want to welcome you. So first, I want to begin by asking you, how do you define a relationship?
That's an excellent question, Regan. Everybody uses relationships, the word relationships. You know, I'll go to conferences and attend workshops, and it kind of gets randomly thrown out. And before I wrote the book and while I was writing the book, I tried to define what is a relationship. And I think we were successful, and I went all over the country trying to find out, Library of Congress, what is a definition of a relationship? I define relationship as a positive emotional connection between two people that builds trust. And that's what we're trying to do in the nonprofit sector when we meet a stakeholder. And when I talk about trust, Regan, I don't mean trusting them, they trust us with their money. They're trusting us with their time, their talent, their leadership, and their reputation. So those four things that are extremely important. When you take friendship out of it, which is really important, it becomes easier because, not to ramble on, but one of the challenges we have in the nonprofit sector, we might have a 30-year-old interacting with a 65-year-old retired banker. When they bring friendship into the equation, they say, I could never be friends. This person's as old as my grandfather or a few years older than my father. So it has nothing to do with friendship whatsoever.
So then what is relationship fundraising?
If you can imagine a ladder, and at the first rung at the bottom of the ladder, we have what I call first contact. And the object is to move our relationship up to three or four rungs to build that particular trust. The most powerful human motivator today, I think, is a relationship. I'm going to tell you a quick story about – I mean, just ask our children, for instance. The other day, my son came in and he said, you know, Dad, can I have $20 for lunches? And he's in his first year of college also. And I gave him a $10 bill and I said, Brandon, can you handle $10 for some lunches? You know, times are tough. And he looked at me with those big blue eyes and he said, Dad, because times are tough, I should suffer. And so I gave him the $20 bill. Uh-huh. The power of a relationship. And there is a big difference in relationships in the nonprofit sector. One of the challenges we have is we're very transactional. And that's why I wrote this book. It seems like, and if I'm wrong, tell me, but it seems like a lot of times in the nonprofit sector, we connect with people when it's time on the calendar because we want them to do something or donate something to our organization. We seldom call up just to say, how are you, Regan? How's the family? How's your kids? How's your husband, et cetera? Getting to know them as a person first and as a donor second. I'm giving you a long-winded, lawyer-like answer. That's what happens when you talk to a recovering attorney.
Well, you know, and this makes sense, though. Relationships are extremely valuable, and I think we don't want to take those for granted. So tell me a little more, though. How does this work? How does this relationship fundraising, you know, how well does it work? How does it work?
Well, a lot of, you know, in my workshops, in fact, tonight, I will ask the group, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important are your relationships to the success of the organization? And everybody's going to say 8, 9, 10, and there'll be a few people in the class tonight will say, Marshall, it's a 12. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, how important are relationships to the success of what you do in your careers, in your life? And they'll all say a 10 or a 12. But then I'm going to ask them a question, when was the – in your education, when was the last time you had any courses telling you how to build a relationship, how to fine-tune your relationships? And I'll bet you there's not one person in that class tonight who will raise their hand. In fact, I was in Chicago last week in front of a group of 800 people, all nonprofits. Three people raised their hand out of 800. And then I'll ask the same question in your post-education, your continuing education work. When was the last time any of you had any training on how to build a relationship, how to connect with people, how to fine-tune that skill? And again, I'll get three or four hands out of hundreds raising them. So how does it work? It works very fast. We have this perception that it takes months and months. Let me give you an example. I had a client or a friend – actually, it was a client. Excuse me. We had a relationship, not a friend. And he was in Spokane, Washington, worked for an organization that needed an additional $150,000 to purchase something. Now, they had a granting organization in Portland that had given them about $25,000 a year. And I said to Paul, why don't you take a trip down to Portland from Spokane, spend $49 each way, take your wife, make the appointment on a Friday, have a weekend in Portland, and meet the people on the board, the program people, and so on. And he says, you know, that's a great idea. And he did it. 6 weeks later, he got a phone call. They eventually moved their grant from $25,000 up to $165,000. And it cost him one plane ticket and a morning of his time to make that move. How well does it work? Works fabulously. How fast does it work? Within hours. I was teaching a class. Do we have time for one more story?
Sure.
I was teaching a class up in Sonoma. And the woman said to me, Marshall, I want to drop your class. She said, I don't get this at all. I said, well, what's there not to get? She says, I just don't get it, Marshall. I really want to drop your class. She was an executive director of a mental health organization. I says, I'll tell you what. I want you to go out and practice what you've learned in the couple of classes. Come back, tell me the results, and if you still want to drop the class, be my guest. So she went out and she met a board member whom she went to lunch with a board member whom she said to me, Marshall, before we had this lunch, just to get his $250 board dues out of him a year was like prying open a shell. Mm-hmm. I called him up. I said I'd like to meet with him. I'd like to have lunch with him. I'm not coming over to ask him for any money. And he said, well, come over to the house. And she asked him what he liked to eat, and he was a strict vegan. She says, I had the most marvelous conversation with this man who had been on my board for 2.5 years. I never knew. We talked about our faith and our children and our childhood together. We found that we had so much in common. I call it a compassionate conversation. And never talked about the organization, never talked about their financial situation. He knew that she was trying to raise $60,000 for a program. Now, this is an organization that had a budget of $335,000 only. 6 weeks later, he came in with a check for $60,000. He gave 20, and he got two of his buddies to give 20. The two of them had never connected before in years. They went out and had this to the point where she said to me, Marshall, he asked me to his congregation, and I went to church with him, to his church one Sunday. And then a couple Sundays, he came to my church, and it was like we were singing Kumbaya together. Took an hour and 15 or 20 minutes for that whole relationship to turn around. Wow. It gives you chills.
It does. So here's what I'm thinking. What about the introverts among us? Those of us that, you know, we have a hard time sparking up a conversation. It's the thought of taking someone to lunch I don't know very well is a little intimidating. You know, is this something that really, though, only works for those who are outgoing, for those who are extroverts? Those who regularly do this?
You know, that's a good question. I think there's a couple things. There's another story I'd love to tell you. No, you don't have to be extroverted. You don't have to be a type A personality whatsoever. In fact, it's better not to be. And there's one story that – and there's one very well-known individual in our history that was very shy. His name was Ronald Reagan. I was – flying home, and I met somebody on a plane who worked with Ronald Reagan. And he said to me, Marshall, Ronald Reagan was one of the shyest men I've ever met. I said, whoa, how do you become the great communicator, the governor of California, the president of the United States, and more importantly, the 20 Mule Team Borax spokesperson, and be shy. And he said, no, everybody who knew Ronald Reagan said he was shy. And I said, okay, I'm going to ask you, how did he overcome his shyness? And he said, you know, above all, Ronald Reagan liked people. Whether he agreed with you as a reporter or disagreed with you, it didn't matter. So if you like people, which he did, what do? You
talk to them.
Talk to them. You ask questions.
You engage with them.
You engage with them, exactly. And that's what Ronald Reagan did. And as a result of him liking people, it came out and he engaged individuals and became quite successful. And so, yes, university studies show that as many as 62 to 64% of all Americans suffer from some degree of shyness. It is huge. Mm-hmm. It is a huge barrier. And this is certainly not a course on shyness, overcoming shyness, or a discussion. But all you have to – I know there's thousands of people out there who are just itching to get out of their shells. But they can't because of their shyness. So what can they do? All they have to do is show they like people. And virtually everybody, especially in our field, likes people. And so that is a you've hit a major, major barrier there in this whole development area is the issue of shyness. Mm-hmm.
So how do I communicate this? How do I inspire my board, perhaps key staff, who might still be hesitant? I come back and tell them, hey, here's a method, here's an approach. You know, let's just these relationships. You know, what's maybe some guidelines I can give or strategies I can approach, particularly with my board?
Well, the most important thing is I don't want people to build relationships simply because they want something. So that's the first caveat. Build relationships because it's a great way to work and live your life. Because if you're disingenuous, people will see right through it. That's the first caveat. Second caveat is no matter how good you are, I don't think you're going to connect with 100% of the people 100% of the time. A good connector, a good person who builds those relationships can probably connect with 82 to 85% of the people, which is unbelievable. Yeah. And the other 10 or 15% that you intuitively know that you cannot connect with, the only thing you can do, and people say, well, what do I do with the other 15%? How about bless and release? That's about the only thing that you can do. And it's interesting. You've asked some really good questions about this whole area of relationship building. There are fundamentals. We learn the basics. We all are good relationship builders or we wouldn't be where we are today. It's a question of how well we can fine-tune those relationships. And most of us learn through modeling of our parents and aunts and brothers and sisters. But, Reagan, there are four basic fundamentals to building a great relationship. It's sort of like building a relationship is both a science and an art. The science have the four fundamentals. And if I tell them to you, they're the four secrets. You promise you're not going to tell everybody because we'll have a whole world of great relationship builders out there. And they're going to seem very simple.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. What is something that you like to do, either cook or sew or a sport or to be a good teacher?
I love it.
What are two or three fundamentals that you would recommend that you would say to people if you want to be a great teacher? You want to be a great professor. Here's what you need to do.
Be passionate about your subject. Be passionate about your students. Be passionate about the learning process.
I know. And you're shrugging your shoulder and say, boy, that sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Be passionate, be passionate. But it's not that easy because look at all the not so great teachers and professors out there. We've all had a few and our children have had a few. The point being that when you say be passionate about your subject, be passionate about your students, it seems easy. But it isn't that easy to behave that way every single day of in your profession. It's the same way in relationships. I'm going to give you the four fundamentals. They're going to seem easy. sort of like the grip, in golf, there's the grip, the stance, and the swing. But poor Tiger Woods has been practicing that swing since he's been 4 years old. And they are, number one, your ability to reach out. The single one of the most important things that you can do is the practicing of your ability to reach out. And a lot of people don't reach out. They're behind a computer. They're behind a telephone. Your ability to reach out to others. The second is to be more curious, to be more professionally curious of who you are. We sat down. I couldn't remember. We've known each other professionally. But I said, where's your husband working now? Mm-hmm. So it helps build the mosaic. Mm-hmm. And then I said, how are your children doing? And so on and so forth. So we're reconnecting. I'm curious to see where your life has been in the months that we have not been talking together and if it's changed. The second is to put the other person first, your needs second. If you put the other person first, then you will get yours. And we don't. In our profession, unfortunately, when we sit down with a prospective stakeholder, it's all about what they can do for us, virtually nothing about them. And the final is to find these intersections where we cross. We could be both single parents. We share the same faith. We grew up in the same neighborhood. Where our belief system and our faith and our values intersect. And they could be small values. Mm-hmm. And then you're saying, that Marshall's not a bad person after all. He sort of believes a little bit in the world, the corner of the world like I believe in. And therefore, a bond is made. So I think we think relationships is some amorphous kind of a situation. You were telling me my son was visiting here. He wanted to see what his old dad does. And you were telling him about the importance of connecting with professors. I think it's a great – I'd love the audience to hear that one.
Well, I hear this and I think, you're talking about time and relationships – I also think of the scenario that with the current recession. Staff is tight. Organizations are cutting back.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of argument can individuals make for taking the time to build these relationships? When someone says, no, I think you need to be in the office or you need to be here.
Good question. I was talking to a person who runs the nonprofit center in Tyler, Texas, out of the United Way. And she says, Marshall, she says, we may be – kind of out in the sticky here, but you said, the truth is the organizations that are building relationships and have relationships are faring very well in this recession, much better than ones that are just purely transactional. She says, something? If you have a relationship and you're giving 100 apples a year to the group, you're not going to go from 100 apples to 0 apples. You might go down to 60 apples, 70 apples. When you have no relationship and you're giving 10 apples a year, it's real easy to say, I'm cutting them off my Christmas list. And most people have no problem with that at all. So it's the adage that if people give to people. And I think that's one of the challenges I see in our business. I think we need to raise the importance of the person in the transaction in the nonprofit sector along with the mission. I mean, I have heard organizations tell their staff, who you are and what you are, you keep in your drawer. We're here to find a cure for X, Y, and Z, or we're here for A, B, and C. And I could say that seems to go the opposite, because if you and I are friends and you call me and you say, gee, we're raising money for Pepperdine for this program at the school, and gee, would you and your wife help out? It doesn't matter what the mission is. I'm going to help you out because I help you as a person. So you could – and we've heard this business of too of, well, what happens if a staff person leaves and they might take the mission – they might take their donors, some of their donors with them. They'll still have a lot left, the organization. But people give to people. It is such – that's why the relationship is so important. If I can't get beyond you as a human being and you can't connect with me, it doesn't matter what your mission is, because – there's going to be a gulf the size of the Grand Canyon that I can't get over. I need your help to build that bridge so you can get me into the pews and into the congregation. Otherwise, you can't get me to church on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I give you long-winded answers, don't I?
It's great, though. It's very valuable, very valuable. I appreciate it so much. So I just want to have one final question.
Sure.
And, you know, really, you know, what is the single most important relationship-building ingredient? You know, as people hear this, you know, what do you want to leave them with as they think about relationship building?
That – I think there's two. Number one is the most important ingredient is your ability to emotionally connect, positively emotionally connect with somebody else. People don't emotionally connect with libraries, swimming pools, or ER rooms, but they do emotionally connect to people. And how important we are as human beings in this whole process, as important as the mission. And our ability to be curious about who these other people are as human beings, where they grew up, where they went to school, why they're doing what they're doing. You know, it's interesting in my book, and it's not alien, there's an example of a key board member leaving. And the executive director was devastated. Why would this person leave? Because there was no connection. The board member – I mean the executive director never sat down and said, Bob, tell me some of the positive experiences you've had in your nonprofit work. But more importantly, Bob, tell me some of the negative experiences you've had, you and your family perhaps. Why did you join our organization? What is it – how do you feel you can contribute, or what would you like to contribute? Or what do you think your strengths are? All these basic questions to try to connect with him that were left out of the equation. So to answer what is the most important, I think the human being is the most important. The human being is the most important. That's proven. Listen, you walk into a ballroom, Reagan, and you see 500 people at the tables. Well, those tables are filled with people who probably have no clue or have never touched the organization but couldn't say no to the askee, could not say no to the askor. Mm-hmm. Well, sure, I'll help your wife and she's involved in the HeartBall. So they're there because of the askor and will never touch the organization again. The power of the person, which I think is really important, which is the antithesis of what we learn sometimes in the nonprofit sector. We're in it for the mission. We can touch other people, but first you have to touch my heart as a human being and my soul and my mind and get me into the congregation. And then the mission of the congregation, the mission of the ministry, will then touch my heart and soul too. So it's a combination of both.
Marshall, thank you so much for being here at Pepperdine, for your great relationship with us.
Oh, thank you.
And for sharing your wisdom with our students and the greater community. Thank you very much.
Anytime. My pleasure. Thank you.